Mahabharata, Chapter 40, Out of Exile. Toward noon of the day after his victory, King Virata re-entered his city. Praised by bards, he shone amid the four Pandavas, whose identities he still did not know. When he reached his palace and was seated upon his throne, he inquired after the whereabouts of his eldest son. Some of the palace ladies told him what had happened. Out of excessive bravery, the prince has gone out to fight the best of the Kurus. With Brihanala as his charioteer and no other support, he rode out, promising to defeat the vast Kuru army and bring back the cows. The king was at once overcome by sorrow. "How will my son fare against the likes of Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and Duryodhan? And when the Kurus hear of the Chagarta's defeat, they will likely attack the city. Surely we are in peril." The king told his ministers to have the army prepare to go out again. "We must quickly rescue Bhumanjaya and hold the Kurus off from attacking our city. With such a useless person as a charioteer, I do not think my son will be alive." Yudhisthira smiled as he took his place near the king. "If Brihanala is his charioteer, you need not fear. The Kurus will not be able to defeat him. Indeed, even the celestial hosts would not be able to overpower him with Brihanala on his chariot." The king looked at Yudhisthira quizzically. This was no time for joking. He wrung his hands and thought only of his son. Surely Bhumanjaya was already dead. It was reckless of him to have ventured out, especially with only a eunuch as his support. As Virata gave orders for his forces to assemble, a messenger entered the court with the news that the Kurus had retreated. "The cows have been rescued, and your son as well, along with his charioteer. They will soon be arriving in the city." "This news is not at all wonderful," Yudhisthira said. "Victory is certain for anyone who has Brihanala with him." The king ignored Yudhisthira's remark and said joyfully, "Decorate the highways with flags and festoons. Worship all the gods with profuse gifts of flowers and costly incense. My other sons and my ministers should go out to greet the prince, along with musicians and beautiful dancers. Bring him here in style, and have a messenger riding an elephant go around the city, ringing a bell to announce our victory." Soon a large procession of handsomely dressed and beautiful maidens, musicians playing drums, trumpets, cymbals, and conches, Brahmins chanting auspicious hymns, and bards composing songs in praise of the prince, made its way out of the city. Overjoyed, the king turned to Yudhisthira and said, "Come, Kanka, let us play dice while we wait for my son. I will happily stake heaps of gems, gold, and numerous well-adorned women. My pleasure knows no limits today." "O king, one should never gamble when he is experiencing so much joy," Yudhisthira replied with a smile. "Gambling is attended by many evils. The great King Yudhisthira lost his entire kingdom, all his wealth, and his godlike brothers in a game of dice. Therefore I do not like to gamble, but I will play if you wish." The king laughed and sat down at his dicing table with Yudhisthira. As they played, he said, "What do you think of this news then, Kanka? My son has single-handedly defeated the invincible Kurus." Yudhisthira again said that it was no surprise, since the prince had Brihanala with him. The king was beginning to feel annoyed. "Why do you praise a eunuch as superior to my son? O Brahman, you insult me by such words. Why should my son not have defeated the Kurus? He is a fearless and powerful fighter." Yudhisthira threw the sapphire dice across the gaming board. "When Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Duryodhan, and the other Kurus assemble for battle, I do not see any warrior who could face them except Brihanala. None have been seen, nor will they ever be seen, who can equal his strength of arms. He always delights in a mighty encounter." The king stood up suddenly, clutching the dice in fury. "You obviously do not know right from wrong. I should certainly punish you for this impropriety." Virata hurled the dice at Yudhisthira and struck him in the face. Blood flowed from his nose, and Yudhisthira cupped his hands to catch it. He looked across at Draupadi, who sat in the court. She quickly fetched a jug of water. Yudhisthir held a wet cloth to his face to stem the flow of blood. At that moment, a second messenger came before the king and announced that his son had arrived at the palace gates. The king, forgetting his anger, told the messenger to bring in the prince at once. The messenger turned to go, and as he was leaving, Yudhisthir whispered to him, "Have the prince come alone. Tell Brihanala not to enter the court." Yudhisthir knew that Arjuna had taken a vow that if anyone caused his blood to flow other than in battle, he would kill that person. If Arjuna saw his brother now, Virata would be slain. Within minutes, Bhumanjaya entered the court, adorned with garlands and sandalwood paste. He bowed at his father's feet and folded his hands toward Yudhisthir. Seeing him covered with blood, he asked his father, "Who has done this to Kanka? O king, who has committed such a crime?" The king looked angrily at Yudhisthir. "This wily Brahmin deserves even more. While I was praising your achievements, he glorified Brihanala as if he were superior." Bhumanjaya was shocked. "You have committed a great sin. Pacify him at once, so that the deadly venom of a Brahmin's curse does not consume you." The king apologized to Yudhisthir, who nodded his forgiveness. Virata then said to his son, "O descendant of Kekaya, in you I truly have a son. There can be none equal to you. Alone you overcame the Kuru host and took back our cows, even as a tiger snatches his prey." The prince shook his head. "I did not rescue the cows, father, nor did I defeat the Kurus. Everything was done by the son of a celestial. Seeing me fleeing in fear, that mighty one, capable of wielding the thunderbolt, stopped me and got upon my chariot. He alone defeated the Kuru army, headed by Bhishma, Drona, Duryodhan, Kripa, Karna, and Ashvatthama. Indeed, I could hardly look at those warriors as they released their weapons. The celestial youth routed them one by one. He overpowered that army of lions and sent them reeling back to Hastinapur." The king was astonished. He asked his son where the youth had gone, but Bhumanjaya said he could not tell. Yudhisthir remained silent, tending the wound on his face. He glanced at Draupadi, who stood smiling. The king would soon discover the truth. It was late in the evening when Virata dismissed the royal court. He went away with his son, listening in astonishment as the prince described the battle with the Kurus. The following day at dawn, Yudhisthir, surrounded by his brothers, entered the royal court before the king arrived. They were dressed in white clothes and adorned with gold ornaments. Like five angry lions, they strode up the royal dais and took their seats on thrones reserved for kings. Soon after their arrival, the king, accompanied by his ministers, entered the hall. He saw with surprise that Kanka was sitting near his throne, with the four Pandavas sitting next to him. Still not realizing their identities, he stormed over to Yudhisthir. "What are you doing? You are a dice player and a courtier. Why are you sitting on a royal seat adorned with ornaments and surrounded by my cook and my horse and cowkeepers?" Arjuna replied, "This man, O king, is worthy of sharing a seat with Indra. Ever engaged in performing sacrifice, respectful toward Brahmins, well-read in the Vedas, firm in his vows, he is the embodiment of virtue. Even the celestials, asuras, nagas, gandharvas, yakshas, and other divine beings are not his equal. He is foresighted, forgiving, powerful, truthful, and self-controlled. Famous all over the world and loved by all, this man is a royal saint like the great Manu himself. O king, this is the foremost of all the Kurus, the pious King Yudhisthir. Does he not deserve a royal throne?" Virata's eyes opened wide. Staring at the five brothers one after another, he replied, "If this is Yudhisthir, then who are these other four? Where is the mighty Bhima and his invincible brother Arjuna? Where are Nakula and Sahadev and the illustrious Draupadi? Since their defeat at dice, no one has seen them." Arjuna lifted his hand toward Bhima. "This one, your cook, Vallabha, is Bhima, possessed of dreadful prowess and energy. It was he who slew the lustful Kichaka. On the other side of Yudhisthira sits Nakula, the keeper of your horses, and next to him is Sahadev, your chief cowherd. These two warriors are capable of slaying enemy battalions consisting of thousands of warriors. As far as the lotus-eyed Draupadi, she has for the last year served in your palace as Surindri, for whose sake Kichaka was slain. I am Arjuna, Kunti's third son. We have all lived happily in your city, like creatures living in the womb. Virata's eyes flooded with tears. The great and virtuous Pandavas had chosen his kingdom to spend their final year of exile. Why had he not recognized them? Now it was obvious. Who else could have exhibited such power in battle but these brothers? The king folded his palms and bowed low to Yudhisthira. As the king stood up again, Bhumanjaya indicated Arjuna. It was he who slew the Kurus, like a lion killing deer. It was he who rescued the cows and overpowered the great heroes from Hastinapur. My ears are still deafened from the incredible blasts of his conch. Virata felt deeply ashamed of himself for insulting and wounding Yudhisthira. He spoke humbly. The time has come for me to honor your illustrious selves. What should I do? If you like, I shall bestow my daughter Uttara upon Arjuna. I am fully indebted to you all. It was Bhima who rescued me from the clutches of Shisharma, and Arjuna who saved us from defeat at the hands of the Kurus. O great king, please forgive me if I have unwittingly given you any offense. You are worthy of my worship. Virata offered his entire kingdom to Yudhisthira, with his scepter, treasury, and city. He arranged for Brahmins to offer them worship, and repeatedly exclaimed, "What good fortune!" The Pandavas got down and embraced the old monarch, who gazed at them without satiation. Again offering his kingdom to them, he turned to Arjuna and added, "O hero, please take my daughter's hand." Arjuna placed his arm around the king's shoulders. "Let your daughter become my daughter-in-law. That would be a fitting alliance between our two houses." The king looked surprised. "Why would you not accept the princess as your own wife?" "Since I came here, your daughter has seen me like a father," Arjuna replied. "We have often been alone together, and she has often confided in me. O king, I have seen her as my daughter and do not wish anyone to think it was ever different. If I were to accept her as my wife, others will doubt her purity. I wish to prove her purity, and therefore will continue to see her as my daughter. There is no difference between a daughter and daughter-in-law. Let her wed my son Abhimanyu. He is Krishna's nephew, and he resembles a celestial in every way. He will be a proper husband for Uttara and a son for you." The king nodded approvingly. "You have spoken wisely, most virtuous one. Do what you think is proper. Whoever has a relationship with Arjuna, no matter what it may be, has all his desires fulfilled." Yudhisthira gave his permission for the marriage, and it was settled. The king then arranged for the brothers to be quartered in his palace. He sent messengers out to announce to the Pandavas' friends and allies that having come out of exile, they were well and now staying in his capital. Yudhisthira invited all of them to come to the city, and before long they began to arrive. Krishna and Balaram came from Dwarka, bringing Abhimanyu and many other members of their family. Drupada arrived, accompanied by a huge division of soldiers. The great King Kasiraj, a good friend of Yudhisthira, whose daughter had married Bhima, also came with another vast army. The Pandavas duly worshipped all of them as they arrived in Virata. They were particularly joyful to see their friend and well-wisher Krishna, who brought with him an immense force of warriors. He bowed before Yudhisthira and Bhima, while the younger Pandavas touched his feet. Then they all embraced and sat down to exchange news. It was settled that the marriage between Abhimanyu and Uttara would take place on the next full moon day, and Virata began to make the arrangements. The city was decked with flags and festoons. When the day of the wedding arrived, garlands were hung everywhere, and musicians played in Virata's palace. Many beautiful damsels wearing jeweled earrings and headed by Draupadi led Uttara to the wedding sacrifice. Numerous Brahmins sat around the fire chanting auspicious hymns from the Vedas. As the Pandavas looked on with Krishna, Balaram, and the other kings, Abhimanyu accepted Uttara's hand from Virata. Surrounded by the Brahmins and kings, the bride and groom shone like a god and goddess amid the celestial hosts. Virata gave Abhimanyu a dowry of 7,000 horses, 2,000 elephants, and a great heap of gems and gold. The ceremony ended with a feast. Pure foods were offered to Vishnu and then distributed first to the Brahmins, then to the thousands of citizens who attended the wedding. Gifts and charity were distributed to all, and everyone left the ceremony filled with joy. As they departed for their homes, they praised the king, as well as his daughter and new son-in-law. With the wedding celebrations over, the Pandavas began to think of their next move. How were they going to recover the kingdom? No word had been received from Hastinapur. The Kurus now knew that the Pandavas were alive and well and living at Virata. According to the agreement made at the final gambling match, it was time to give them back their city and dominions. But it seemed the matter would not be settled peaceably. Krishna suggested that they call an assembly and discuss what to do next. Thus, the day following the wedding, all the kings came to Virata's court. On the front seat sat Virata and Drupada, the senior-most kings, along with Krishna and Balaram, who everyone considered to be the greatest. By their side sat Yudhisthira and his brothers, and all around them were dozens of other monarchs. These mighty heroes shone like stars studding the clear sky. The hall buzzed with their conversation as they settled into their places. When everyone was seated, the noise died down, and they sat gazing pensively at Krishna. Smiling gently and glancing around at all the kings, Krishna spoke first. Everyone knows how Yudhisthira was unfairly defeated at dice and dispossessed of his kingdom by Suvala's son. You all know how he and his brothers were made to live in the forest for 13 years. Those sons of Pandu, who are capable of subjugating the world by force of arms, whose chariots go unrestrained to any terrestrial or celestial region, and who are true to their word, have now completed their vow. They have suffered unbearable hardships, especially in this last year, when they were obliged to accept menial service to others. They now seek their rightful kingdom. Krishna looked around the assembly. All the kings, seated on golden thrones decked with gems, gazed intently at him as he continued. O kings, consider what is right and best for both the son of Dharma and for Duryodhan. The virtuous Yudhisthira will not accept even the kingdom of the gods unrighteously. He would prefer the rightful lordship of just a single village. Although he has been antagonized and cheated by the Kauravas, he still wishes them well. Duryodhan and his brothers have repeatedly tried to kill the Pandavas, but Yudhisthira has tolerated everything with a peaceful mind. All of his brothers are obedient to his order and would never abandon virtue. They will accept whatever he decides is right, and he will always follow my advice. Krishna glanced at Yudhisthira, whose eyes were fixed affectionately on Krishna's face. Yudhisthira desired only to please Krishna, and his brothers all shared that sentiment. Whatever Krishna advised would surely be best for them. Even Bhima, although longing to wreak vengeance on the Kauravas, would renounce his anger if Krishna deemed it wrong. He rested a hand on his great mace as Krishna went on. My feelings are that we should first establish Duryodhan's intentions by sending a reliable messenger to Hastinapur. Let us try by all means to settle this affair peaceably and fully in accordance with the eternal codes of religion. Let us avoid unnecessary violence. But if Duryodhan will not return Yudhisthira's lands, then I think there will have to be war. The Pandavas will slay Duryodhan and all his followers. If you feel the Pandavas' cause is just, then unite yourselves and your forces with them, and march out for battle. Tell me, O kings, if my words meet with your approval." Balaram raised his hand, signifying his intention to speak. The assembly turned toward him. His dark blue silks highlighted his pure white complexion. A brilliant helmet adorned his head, and a garland of white lotuses hung around his neck. By his side lay his golden plow weapon. As he spoke, his voice resounded around the hall like a drum. "Devaki's son has spoken well. His words are meant for the welfare of both the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Let the Kuru kingdom be shared. The heroic sons of Kunti will dwell in peace with their cousins, each ruling half of the Kuru empire. I agree that a man should be dispatched to Hastinapur. He should address the noble-minded Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, Kripa, Karna, Shakuni, and all of Dhritarashtra's sons. All of them are heroes, and all of them are well versed in the Vedas. After informing these men of Yudhisthira's desire, the messenger should carry back their reply. But the Kauras must be given due deference. After all, it was by Yudhisthira's fault that the kingdom was lost. Although unskilled at dice, he accepted the skillful Shakuni's challenge. There were many other kings with whom he could have played, but he chose the son of Suvala." Balaram looked at Yudhisthira and smiled. The Pandava showed no sign of discomfort at his words. Yudhisthira had always felt guilty of a misdemeanor for having gambled away his kingdom. He bowed his head as Balaram went on. "The brave son of Pandu unfortunately lost at every step of the game. In the grip of lust and anger, he gambled everything and was defeated. Who can blame Shakuni for this? Therefore, we must adopt a conciliatory tone when we address the Kauravas. We should avoid war by any means. That which is gained by peaceful methods is beneficial to all, while that gained by war has the opposite effect." Although Yudhisthira accepted Balaram's speech, it surprised the other Pandavas. They knew that the Yadava hero had a soft spot for Duryodhan, his disciple at mace fighting. But when he last saw them, just after their leaving Hastinapur, he had been in favor of them marching into the Kuru capital and punishing the Kauravas. It was hard to understand why his attitude had changed. Perhaps Duryodhan had influenced him with his version of what happened in Hastinapur. Whatever the causes, the Pandavas knew that Balaram was always their well-wisher. They remained silent as he paused in his speech. Suddenly, Satyaki, a powerful Yadava hero, and one of Arjuna's martial students, leapt to his feet. He was incensed by Balaram's words and could not hear more. Even as Balaram continued to speak, Satyaki interrupted, and all eyes turned toward him. "A man will always reveal his inner nature when he speaks. Even as a forest contains trees which bear fruits and those which do not, so in one family are born powerful heroes and others who are powerless and cowardly. O you who bears the sign of the plow on your banner, I am loath to call you cowardly, but why do you display such timidity toward the wicked Kauravas?" Balaram sat calmly, but Satyaki's face glowed red with fury. He gazed around the assembly as he went on. "How can anyone sit here and listen as Balaram speaks in this way? We all know what happened in Hastinapur. Yudhisthira was cheated of his kingdom by a mean trick. Had the Kauravas gone to Indraprastha and defeated him there, then that would have been fair. But they summoned him to play in their own city, and then compelled him to accept Shakuni's challenge. How can prosperity attend such men? Why should Yudhisthira now approach them in a servile mood? The Kuru kingdom is his by right. It once belonged to his grandfather, and then to his father. There is no doubt about this. Even if this pious man had no rightful claim to the kingdom, he still deserves to rule the earth by virtue of his qualities. If the Kauravas will not willingly give back his ancestral territories, then I will force them to do so. I will persuade them by cold steel on the battlefield." Satyaki stepped forward and stood on the mosaic floor in the center of the hall. He clutched the hilt of his sword as he stepped into the middle of a design depicting the blazing sun. "I will oblige the evil-minded Kauravas to fall at Yudhisthira's feet. If they refuse, then they shall have to go with their ministers to death's abode. Who can withstand Satyaki when he stands ready to fight? Can the mountains bear the thunderbolt? In the same way, who can bear the brunt of the Gandiva bow when Arjuna wields it, or the force of Bhima's mace? When the Pandavas are united with Drupada and his sons, as well as with their own sons, what man valuing his life would face them? When the great Yadava heroes come out for battle, what will the Kauravas do? After killing all of them, let us install Yudhisthira as emperor of the world. It is impious and shameful to beg from enemies. We should set out at once. Either the Kauravas will surrender the kingdom, or they will lie prostrate on the battlefield." Having vented his anger, Satyaki returned to his seat. Balaram still remained peaceful. He could understand Satyaki's feelings. The old king Drupada then spoke. "O you with long arms, it will doubtlessly be as you say. Duryodhan will never surrender the kingdom. Dhritarashtra is too fond of his son, and so he will follow him without question. So it will be with Bhishma and Drona. They have a misguided loyalty. In my opinion, we should not act on Balaram's suggestion. Duryodhan will not respond to a humble approach. He will misunderstand such mild messages as weakness. Force is the only language he respects." Everyone present esteemed Drupada's wisdom and maturity. They listened attentively. "This is my advice. Let us prepare for battle. Send out messengers to all our allies and have them come here. Duryodhan will certainly do the same. Even now his men will be heading out and approaching even those whom we now count as friends. Our messengers should travel swiftly around the globe, for a noble man will not refuse he who first asks him for help." Drupada then named the kings and their countries where they could find support. He knew Duryodhan would ask everyone to fight with him, whether they were his allies or not. It was important to reach the kings first with their own plea. After listing 40 or 50 monarchs who might assist them, Drupada concluded, "While we are assembling our forces, let a good man go to Dhritarashtra. I suggest we send my priest. We should carefully instruct him on what to say to the Kauravas. But I do not expect much to come of that. Battle is inevitable." Krishna clapped his hands approvingly. "These words befit the great king of the Panchalas, who is unequaled in prowess. You are old in learning and wisdom. Thus you are just like our guru. We should act as you say, and not otherwise. I agree. But my relationship with both the Pandavas and the Kauravas is the same, regardless of the present situation among them. I have come here and been pleased by King Virata's reception. The wedding is over, and now I'll return to Dwarka. I leave it in your hands, O monarch, to guide these kings in how to sue for peace between the two parties. If a mutually agreeable solution cannot be found, and if the foolish Duryodhan will not accept peace due to his pride and ignorance, then summon me again. I will do all in my power to help." The assembly of kings agreed to Krishna's proposal, and they withdrew to their own quarters. Virata worshipped Krishna with respect and sent him on his way back to Dwarka. Then he began to make preparations for war. Messengers on swift horses were dispatched around the world, and soon large armies began to arrive at Virata. Troops poured in from all quarters and set up camp around the city. Filled with men and animals, the earth seemed covered with dark clouds. The gathering troops created a clamor, resembling the roaring ocean. In the Kuru capital also, vast armies were amassing to support Duryodhan. The goddess Earth, with her mountains and forests, seemed to tremble under the burden of so many warriors. When the large force was ready at Virata, Drupada, after consulting with the other kings and Brahmins, spoke with his priest. "O Brahman, Among all men, those who are twice born are the best. Among the twice born, the Brahman is the best. And among Brahmins, he who knows the Vedas is superior. Those who have realized Vedic knowledge are even better. And among those, the best are they who practice their knowledge in life. I am of the opinion that you are the best of all men, having realized the Supreme Brahman. Your knowledge and wisdom are equal to Brihaspati's. You know what kind of man Yudhisthira is, and how the Kurus stole his kingdom. You also know the situation in Hastinapur, as well as the nature and disposition of Dhritarashtra and his son. Duryodhan will not voluntarily return Yudhisthira's kingdom. His old father, blinded by attachment, will follow his lead. Drupada then explained that although he should go to Hastinapur to ask Dhritarashtra to return the Pandava's kingdom, there was another purpose. He knew that Duryodhan and his father could not be swayed by reason. The priest's job, therefore, was to convince other Kuru leaders of the righteousness of Yudhisthira's claim and of Duryodhan's foolishness in bringing on war. After 13 years of listening to Duryodhan, few among the Kurus may still recognize the truth. The cruel and dishonest treatment meted out to the Pandavas at the dice game might have been all but forgotten. Even the wise and ever-virtuous Balaram seemed to have been influenced toward the Kauravas. By speaking words of virtue and truth, you will win the hearts of honest men. Vidura will support you, as will Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa. In this way, you will create dissension among the Kurus. They will lose time trying to re-establish unity among themselves, and that will allow us to make further preparations for war. It may even be that Dhritarashtra, moved by your words, will act upon them and do what is right. In any event, we will benefit from your going there. Do not fear for yourself, as they will certainly respect you. You are a learned Brahmin and an ambassador, as well as an aged and virtuous man. Having received Jupiter's request, the priest left immediately for Hastinapur.